JC2S, Part 1. Number 13A.
Yes, so we can see then the main tone of spirit as mind very clearly there. Now, to go on to spirit of spirit, the epitome is the pure language of spirit speaks through parables, miracles, and the final triumphant over death. Now, what is the main tone here? The pure language of spirit, all right, that's still being maintained, isn't it? Now, we're getting more information. First, we saw that the pure language of spirit has a spiritual meaning, not a physical meaning. Spirit is mind. Now, how does that pure language of spirit speak? Through what? Okay, and what are those? Those are just what? What are parable and miracles and the final triumphant from death? What are those? They're symbols. So therefore, we see that the pure language of spirit speaks through symbols, spiritual symbols. And that's through signs and symbols, through words and works. So they have a, and that's that this tone of spirit, which is that it speaks through symbols, through a symbolic nature. We'll see that as we go on. So you have the pure language of spirit speaks through symbols, huh? And signs. All right, spirit as spirit. Then, the next epitome, the five physical senses are too opaque to transmit the language of spirit. What's the main tone? Main tone? All right, again, it's just clear, isn't it? Now, we've seen so far that the new language of spirit as mind speaks a spiritual meaning, not a human meaning. And the language of spirit is spirit speaks through spiritual symbols and signs. And now the language of spirit does not speak through the five physical senses. That's the opposite of soul. But it will give it in the text the positive meaning that it does speak through soul sense. So you see, you have spirit, the language of spirit, you could underline in orange. And then soul, the five physical senses, we could underline in yellow. Yes, so in regards to coloring, then we would have, under the language of spirit would be orange, wouldn't it? And then under the five physical senses are too opaque. We would put yellow because it's the opposite of soul. And to transmit, well, that's a Christ tone because the language of spirit is Emmanuel speaking to us. Therefore, what we will see that the true sense is that spiritual sense is speaking to us, is translating to us. So, therefore, we would, if you like, to indicate the overall Christ tone, you can there. But just to keep the main tone and subtone, we would have then orange under the language of spirit and yellow under the five physical senses are too opaque. Also, as we've said, that spirit is transparency. So that also can be indicating that the five physical senses as counterfeits are too opaque of the transparency of spirit. All right. Then we read the next subtone, that it is the science of Christ and its spiritual interpretation is the leaven of spirit that leavens all human doctrines. Now, this may be a bit more difficult, but what is the main tone? Good. Because we see in the chapter here that it's the language of spirit is the leaven of spirit. You see, so it's saying, and we'll see when we go through that the language of spirit is the leaven of spirit, so leaven of spirit is underlined in orange. Now, what is the principal tone? What is the leaven of spirit? And is that a principal tone? Yes, because that's that science of Christ, that principle, and its spiritual interpretation. So we underline in purple, principle, the science of Christ and its spiritual interpretation. That's the principal tone. And that is the leaven of spirit, the language of spirit. That leavens, there's a retranslation tone with the spirit tone to the retranslation. What is it retranslating out of itself back into the principle? All human doctrine is the opposite of principle. So we underline that in purple. So you hear quite strongly now that that language of spirit, which is the leaven of spirit, which is the science of Christ and its spiritual interpretation, which is coming to us and retranslating, leavening all out of itself, all human doctrines back into the science of Christ and its spiritual interpretation.
It seems like when you come to the operational sense of leaven, though it takes on more of the Christ tone.
Well, leaven has the Christ tone in it, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All the way through.
Yes.
So
yes, it all.
It has that operational sense. It,
yeah, right. And spirit, huh, too. It has that Christ and spirit tone, because leaven is very much a spirit term, isn't it? And a Christ truth tone. So it takes on the Christ spirit, the spirit in its Christ truth tone, isn't it? Because you have the leaven of spirit and also the leaven of truth in here.
I think that when it says speaks through,
yes.
Also with the operational sense of Christ.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's so full of tonality. That's right. Mm-hmm. Then we go to spirit as life. The epitome reads, the spiritual leaven of spirit, though hidden in sacred secrecy, is ever at work to destroy the entire mass of error. So just looking for the big main tone, the big main tone of spirit is, all right, so the spiritual leaven of spirit we underline in orange. Though hidden in sacred secrecy, that is a tone there of always hidden is soul, huh? It's unknown to the world, which is always riding behind this chapter. And now is ever at work?
Life
is ever. Always, that's life. Life is an always, is ever at work, is a life tone. So is ever is life. We underline is ever in brown. At work is, as Emma said, the Christ. And it's now, the leaven of spirit appears as the leaven of truth, which destroys the entire mass of error. That's the leaven of truth. So you really get both tones in there, the leaven of spirit and the leaven of truth. So to just in your epitome, if you want to just hold to the main tone and subtone, the main tone, the leaven of spirit, underlined in orange, though hidden in sacred secrecy, underlined in brown to give you the life subtone, is ever at work to destroy the entire mass of air. We'll discuss all the other implications when we get to the subtone. Then, to see behind spirit is truth, the leaven of spirit changes the whole of mortal thought. The main tone of spirit is the leaven of spirit, underlined in orange. And then the truth in the subtone, yeah, it changes the whole of mortal thought, isn't it? Changing is the Christ truth, and what's it changing out of itself? It's changing the whole of mortal thought out of itself back into a state of divine consciousness, which is a consciousness of that language of spirit. And now spirit is love. God and nature are one, good and spiritual. Mortals alone regard God as the creator of matter and evil. Now this might be a little bit more, a little trickier. What is the main tone?
Good and spiritual.
good and spiritual, because now the leaven is fulfilled. We know when we get to love, we get the fulfillment, don't we? So we have to hear the fulfillment now tone of the leaven of spirit. So the what is the fulfillment of that leaven of spirit? What has it brought out now? It has made what good and spiritual? God and nature are one. So you see, God and nature is a spirit and nature, it could say. Here it says, spirit and nature are now one. Now, spirit and nature are underlined, that spirit, isn't it? So you underline in orange, spirit and nature. Here Max put God, but he means this big point. Spirit and nature are one. What tone is that? Love, all inclusive. So God and nature are one. The whole thing could be underlined in green. God and nature could be in orange, but the fact that they are one is love, all inclusive. And what are they as one? Evil? No. They're good and spiritual. So you can underline that in orange. Therefore, mortals alone, opposite of spirit, regard God as the creator of matter and evil, opposite of spirit. So here we finally arrive through the reasoning of the subtones, and we'll come back and do point three, seeing the logical reasoning in the subtones. But you already can hear how the main epitome for the main tone, that the new language of spirit leavens the material sense of nature and of natural law and translates them back into the nature of spirit. Do you hear now how God and nature now are one? That leavening process has been fulfilled, and now God and nature are one. Spirit and its nature are one. It no longer has a material sense of nature. But it's been fulfilled that it has been retranslated back into its spiritual nature. So through, we can see indicated through the subtones and through the law of the subtones, the fulfillment there, bringing out the reasoning from premise to conclusion, the main tone has been fulfilled, has reached its conclusion. All right? So now we want to take the text. We do point two in our assignment, and that is now to hear these big categories behind the text itself. Culturing the divine science, 7,000 year period of tonality, of being able to hear the capitalized terms behind a text. And again, we're just learning. We just want to get the method and the spirit of it. If we don't always hear it, it doesn't matter. The main point is that we get the method, not the answers. All right, so we start then as spirit is mind. Always aware now that that new language of spirit in the main tone comes to us, is Emmanuel with us. And that language of spirit here is the language of its spiritual nature, the language of the pure nature of God is coming to us and is one with us. And it's going to leaven or retranslate out of us a material sense of nature and of natural law and translate it back into the nature of spirit happening in us, science, theology, medicine, the universe, including man. Let's hear how that's brought out now. How that is going to happen, beginning with its premise. Now, mind will make its statement. Mind is the beginning. We start with mind. Mind is the standpoint that gives us the beginning of the development of that premise. So it says that the language of spirit is the new tongue. It has a spiritual and not a mortal or physical or human meaning. So now we're going to hear that the retranslation is going to start on the fact that the language of spirit has a spiritual meaning. And it's going to retranslate out its physical meaning. So how is that built up? So we read here mind as mind, which covers then 1:16:20 to 1:17:13. Excuse me, spirit is mind. Sorry. So spirit is mind from 116.20 to 117.13. Christian science strongly emphasizes the thought that God is not corporeal, but incorporeal, that is, bodiless. Mortals are corporeal, but God is incorporeal. As the words person and personal are commonly and ignorantly employed, they often lead, when applied to deity, to confused and erroneous conceptions of divinity and its distinction from humanity. If the term personality is applied to God, means infinite personality, then God is infinite person, in the sense of infinite personality, but not in the lower sense. An infinite mind in a finite form is an absolute impossibility. The term individuality is also open to objections, because an individual may be one of a series, one of many, as an individual man, an individual horse, whereas God is one, not one of a series, but one alone and without equal. God is spirit, therefore the language of spirit must be and is spiritual. Christian science attaches no physical nature and significance to the supreme being or his manifestation. Mortals alone do this. God's essential language is spoken of in the last chapter of Mark's gospel as the new tongue, the spiritual meaning of which is attained through signs following. All right, so let's go and see here what is being brought out under this marginal heading of divine personality. What is she bringing out here? All right, we read it, just that marginal heading point. She's talking, what's all is being brought out? She's talking about God, isn't she? For some reason, she's explaining to us what God is. And she's explaining to us what God is not. But what's the key point here? That's always the word, isn't it? She's always saying what God is. She says God is. She says what God is. She says God in this first sentence here. God is incorporeal, bodiless. God is not corporeal. We think, well, that's very nice. But what does that have to do with the language of spirit? Interesting. But we want to talk about the language of spirit. What do we think she's doing here? She's setting up something, isn't she? And she's setting up what? The basis for the language of spirit. She's saying, all right, if we have a language of spirit about God, then it better be a language that is going to explain and define what God is as incorporeal and bodiless. That the language we use better not be a language that is going to define God as corporeal. So she says we better right away use that one-valued logic of spirit, which is the only language which defines God as incorporeal. It's got to be a spiritual language that is used. It can't be a language of dualism or a pantheistic language, a materialistic pantheistic language which is going to define God as material or as a mind in matter, corporeal. You see? Right away she's saying, now we make sure our basis is correct for this language of spirits. Therefore, the language has to define God correctly, not incorrectly. Mel?
She recasts the personality as well as the individuality.
All right, well, that's the next one, isn't it? We'll come to the next paragraph.
Seems like that whole kind of tone is the information of mind presenting what the language of spirit is with the nature.
Yes, uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yes, you can use all those ways that she's bringing out, isn't it? She says that I'm defining for you what a God is and what God is not, and that your language is spirit. Yes, based on the information of mind there. Mm-hmm. On mind's ideas, as she'll say, based on the pure ideas of mind, as Emma says, based on the pure information of mind, is going to define what God is and what God is not. Not on the information of duality, mm-hmm. coming from mortal mind. Yeah, definitely. Then, as Mel wants to bring out, she talks about the next point, she talks about, as words, person, and personal are commonly and ignorantly employed, they often lead, when applied to deity, to confused and erroneous conceptions of divinity in its distinction from humanity. You see, the accentuation isn't on persons or person, but the accentuation is on words, terms. She's saying, in this language of spirit, as the words, person and personal are commonly and ignorantly employed, they often lead to confusion about God. So she's saying our terms, the words and terms that we use, have to be used intelligently. There's a mind tone, isn't it? Used intelligently, not ignorantly. Intelligently is always then according to defining what God is in its one-valued logic, and ignorantly would be what God is not in its two-valued logic. So the terms have got to be used intelligently. Spirit is mind, not ignorantly from the two-valued logic, spirit from the human mind standpoint and human mind definitions. If you use it from the human mind material meaning, it's going to lead to confusion, opposite of spirit. And erroneous conceptions, the opposite of mind, it's going to lead to confused conceptions. It's wonderful, isn't it? Now, again, just we're learning method. If you don't always hear what I say, don't be concerned. You can go back over it. As I said, we've got the tapes. I have to go on, would be for another week or two or three or four, just a paragraph. Because we now know every paragraph is loaded. So we just have got, I have to speak it out. You can make notes, and then we'll come back. Otherwise, we would be a long time. So we here could underline in orange as the words that she's talking about, the terms, and underline in black are ignorantly, because when words or symbols of spirit are ignorantly, that's the opposite of mind employed, they often lead, there's the opposite of mind, when applied to deity, to confuse, that's the opposite of spirit, and erroneous conceptions, the opposite of mind. So, could be in black. So, you can see she's saying that words have got to be intelligently employed. They have to have a spiritual meaning. Spirit is in mind. They can't, and with that spiritual meaning, they're going to lead to ordered ideas, to spiritual ideas, to pure ideas concerning divinity and its distinction from humanity. But if ignorantly employed, those words would have a material meaning which will lead to confusion, to confused concepts concerning deity and its distinction from humanity. Do you see how important the language, she says, is? If you want God to be understood correctly as spiritual and incorporeal, then make sure your language speaks a spiritual meaning. If it speaks terms and words that have a material connotation, it's just going to lead to confusion about deity. Hence where she said how hard it was for her to take this language of spirit, the new tongue, and put it into a material language. She said because of that material connotation, that was a huge concession to have to put it into the language of the day, which had so many material connotations, material meanings, that it could lead to confusion. And I saw the danger, and yet I still had to put it into the language of the day because it had to somehow make that concession to the human for the advancement of spiritual good. But there was a danger in it, and she shows us the danger here under the tone of spirit is mine. Then she just goes on to show that this individuality is of a one-valued logic that is being brought out, that individuality of spirit is the one. That's all the spirit tone. In the next paragraph, when she talks about the term individuality, is also open to objections. So be careful in your language, because an individual may be one of a series, one of many. As an individual man, an individual horse, whereas God is one, there's spirit, huh? God is one, not one of a series, but one alone and without equal. So she says in the language, when you use a term, see the term individuality, the accentuation is on term, underlined in orange. When you use this term or words or symbols, such as individuality. So that's just an example. She could have given us many examples. The accentuation is on term. She's saying if you use words in terms, for example, individuality, the language of spirit has got to be exact, because individuality can mean so many things. To the human connotation, to the material meaning, individuality can mean one of a series, one of many. But she says, to the spiritual meaning, it's got to bring out that individuality means the infinite one, that infinite one spirit. See, that she's bringing out spirit. That infinite individuality has to refer to the infinite one, which is spirit, of the nature of spirit, and not to bring out that it's one of a series, but that it's one alone and without equal. Wonderful. Then under the spiritual language, she shows God is spirit, underlined in orange, huh? Therefore, the language of spirit must be, there's the Christ, there's the must be. This language of spirit has to be, if it's going to be the Christ to the situation, then it better be spiritual. It's better speak the language with its spiritual meaning. So the language of spirit to be the Christ to a situation has to be spiritual. And she says, Christian Science attaches no physical nature and significance to the Supreme Being. Therefore, that language of spirit, which is the Christ to a situation, can't have any spiritual meaning, the opposite, a physical meaning, the opposite of spirit and mind, when related to the Supreme Being. Mortals alone are going to attach a physical meaning when applied to God. The mortal language, the common language, is going to do that. But when we talk about God's essential language, there's the language of spirit again, which is spoken in the last chapter of Mark's gospel as the new tongue, there's the language of spirit again. The spiritual meaning of which is attained through signs following. So she says, therefore, the language of spirit to be the Christ to a situation has to speak with the spiritual meaning, spirit is mind, and not with a physical nature and meaning. The opposite of spirit is mind. Isn't it wonderful? So exact.